Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's March 13th, 2012. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. We've got some interesting guests tonight here in Beer Sessions Radio. First, we'll give a shout out to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. GreatBrewers.com is your online connection to the world of craft beer, an online attempt to teach people about beer. But, you know, let's jump in right now. We've got Chris O'Leary. Mr. Blogger, say your name and say what you do, because it's too many people here today.
Chris O'Leary, I'm the editor of BrewYorkNewYork.com.
And we got Jim, tell him your name and what you do.
I'm Jim Barnes, and I'm the New York City rep for Pretty Things Beer and Ale Project.
And Jay?
My name is Jay Steinhauer. I'm the head of sales for American Beer Distributing here in Brooklyn.
We've got a very cool bunch of guys. So you guys are going to jump in now and tell me, what do you guys do on the GreatBrewers.com website?
Well, I like their Beer Cloud app, actually. It might be probably one of my favorite tools to use when I'm trying to figure out what beer to pair with what food. Even just style-wise, it's great for that.
And where do you put it on your iPhone?
Yeah, my iPhone.
Well, that's great.
It's a great app.
Have you ever done anything with thegreatbrews.com, Jay?
No, not yet. I think they're kind of... We're not affiliated yet. I mean, you guys are hooked up with, is it Union you guys do a lot of the beer with?
GreatBrewers.com. Anyways, they're great. And opinions across the board, we want to say thanks for sponsoring us. And also a shout out to the Good Beer Seal, GoodBeerSeal.com, Association of 34 New York City Beer Bars. Well, here we are in the studio at Roberta's, Bushwick. Guys, what was your favorite beer this weekend, Chris?
I was very blessed to come across a bottle of the Bell's Batch 7000 this weekend by pure chance at Mug's Ale House during Split Thy Skull, their big beer festival. A couple people snuck in a few bottles of stuff that was in their cellar, and there was half a bottle left just sitting on the ledge of the bar. And I go to the guys who were clearly drinking it, and one was almost passed out, and I'm like, are you going to drink this? I'm not going to let good beer go to waste. So that's a
really good festival, isn't it?
Oh, it's phenomenal. Yeah. It really
Jim,
is.
Have you been to it before? Split Thy Skull?
Yes, I have been to it before. In fact, when I first moved to New York, that was one of my first beer bar experiences was going out there back in 2007. So really enjoyable.
What do you think about an extreme beer fest? I mean, Was that what beer's all about?
That's a dangerous precedent to set, though, serving a lot of really big beers. You know, I think I had a total of three.
Have you been to any extreme beer?
Yeah, I'm friends with Ed over at Mugs, and it's the time of the year to drink big beer, right? It's supposed to be cold outside, even though it's 70 degrees outside today, but this is the season for multi-potent product.
And Jay, you guys are the small family-run beer distributorship in Brooklyn.
American That's right.
Beer. Do you have any really good extreme beers right now?
Let's see here. The seasonals that we've gotten in lately. We're selling the Avery Czar, which is their Russian Imperial Stout. That's pretty whopping. We got a little bit of the Maharaja, which is their Imperial IPA, which we're only going to get once this year. So it's coming and going. Those are some of the big dogs at the minute. Avery's probably, you know, a huge line of sessionable and high-potency beers. If you've ever visited out there, it's ridiculous when you go into their tasting room. There's items there. I mean, they probably have 40 lines up, and 20 of them you can never get outside of the brewery. So, yeah, it's one of their strong suits.
All right. And Jim, at Pretty Things, do you have anything coming out, anything special?
Well, we've got with us in the studio some of our late winter seasonal. There wasn't much that was able to come down in New York, but there's still some of beer of it popping around in different bottle shops and on tap. There may even be some on tap this weekend at Drambar, where I'm going to DJ at on Sunday between 4 and 8. So we're calling it I Dream of Dusseldorf. Reason being, this is a German-style beer. This is a dark lager called Lovely St. Winifred, and it we basically did a decoction in the mash process, whereas you take a portion of the mash out of the kettle or the mash tun, bring it to a boil, and put it back in to the mash tun to bring the mash temperature up. So it resulted in a really interesting, roasty, almost smoky flavor. So we'll have some of that in a little bit to sample around. So
all right, let's pop it. Let's have some.
All right. Yeah.
Sounds pretty interesting. Well, we're trying to we've got a main guest tonight, and we're trying to just kind of introduce everybody. I'm sitting here with a copy of Beer for Dummies, and I'm laughing because it's Beer for Dummies, but I read it last night. And I have to say, getting into the middle of it, there's some really good chapters. And we've got one of the authors, Steve Ettlinger, here with us tonight. Steve, we're going to talk a little about what's in your book, and we're going to drink beer and hang out a little bit.
Sounds like a really good mix there.
So tell us, how did you get involved with the Beer for Dummies book? I know Marty Knackel, he's going to call in a little bit, and we'll talk to him. Tell us how you guys got started working on this book.
It actually goes back to about 1995. I had wanted to do a book on beer because the beer culture for craft beers was just beginning then in the early 90s, and I was a book producer. I contacted Marty because he was doing a newsletter for a Beer of the Month club called Beer Across America, and we did a little guide to breweries around the country. And then I thought, excuse me, because I also worked on a book I had an idea for that turned out to be pretty popular called Wine for Dummies. So I convinced the Dummies people, who had just started doing the non-computer Dummies titles, to do Beer for Dummies at the same time, and we recruited Marty to do it. Marty's the expert. I helped him put it into the Dummies format. And here we are, how many years later? Came out in 96, and now we're doing a second edition.
Well, I'll tell you, there's some things that really surprised me, like this, a really good extreme beer chapter. That's why we started talking about extreme beers. And what I liked about it was it went back to the basics. It started talking about monastery-style Belgian beers.
Maybe we should do a sequel called Beer for Extreme Dummies or Extreme Beer for Dummies. I'm sorry, I got that. Extreme Beer for Dummies, sorry.
It might be good. So I don't know if anyone else in the room has read the book, but let's go off on that theme. Let's try to have some. Does anyone here want to talk about extreme beers, in particular the great monastery beers of Belgium? You know, Jay.
Sure. I mean, it's a great lead in. I think there are plenty of American beers that have been being produced right now that have been influenced by that huge historical brewing culture over there and its full flavors. And, you know, I think it's interesting to see how we are now celebrating some of these beers that we could never have gotten here in this country for a long time. Now we're clamoring and chomping at the bit to get them here. I mean, West Veltrin's supposed to be coming, right?
Yep.
All right. Shelton's bringing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so we're getting it. We're finally getting some more of the obscure, sought-after things into the country. But I think also on the flip side, if you want to bring it up, that it's interesting that, you know, this culture here in this country that's brewing all these beers and all the new breweries that are emerging are immersed in this kind of thinking. And what's going to be coming forward in the future is more beers inspired by lost historical style brews, which is, I think, is fascinating. You know, and it pairs up with food fantastically, and it's very interesting.
Jim, with Pretty Things, tell us about the historical beers. And who's the guy that's helping you with the recipes? Ron Pattinson from
England? Yeah, there's a guy that is based in Amsterdam. He's actually English, and he is obsessed with beer history, particularly in London. And so we had been working with him, and he and Dan had been talking back and forth for quite a while before this whole historical beer thing came about with us with Once Upon a Time. And he more or less convinced us to start brewing these beers, these old brew sheets, and they're dated brew sheets. And they're basically the brewer's original notes on, you know, everything from, you know, water measurements for liquoring in to temperature, all that stuff. So we basically reformulated those for obviously smaller brew houses and started brewing these beers that hadn't been brewed for years. So we, as of yet, we did a beer from 1832, which was a mild. We did a KK beer, which is basically a very dark hoppy beer. And
that was terrific. So what was that, like a 1900 style?
Yeah, that was from 1901, so turn of the century Edwardian period. So they did these classifications with single X, double X, triple X, quadruple X, and same with the K. So, you know, that gets them, you know, you start walking on eggshells with the K. So we stopped at the second K, obviously. So
smart marketing move.
Exactly.
You'll get into a K hole.
I know, in a big way. But this next beer we're doing, I believe they're single X beers. From Barclay Perkins. What we decided to do was do two at once. And we're going to be launching those beers tomorrow in Boston at the Public House in Brookline. And Ron Pattinson's coming over for that. And so this one brewery that he loves to talk about, Barclay Perkins, which doesn't exist anymore, they brewed basically a single X beer in 1838. And they brewed that same beer, a single X beer, in 1945. They're two completely separate different beers. One is a paler, hoppy ale, about 7.5%. And then the one from 1945 is basically the prototype for the dark mild, which is a dark beer at 2.9%. So we're bringing those both out at once to drink side by side. So we're going to be all dressed in either 1838 costumes or, you know, 1945. So
I was going to say that's the most modern costume I've seen you wear if you go with the 1945 one.
I know. Well, luckily my girlfriend Jerry, she is a Lindy Hop dancer, so she's helped me sort of develop an outfit.
Jim is definitely the snappiest dresser on the New York City beer scene.
Wow. Where's the party tomorrow in Boston?
It's in Brookline at one of our favorite beer bars, Public House. It's two bars rolled up in one. You have the Public House and then you have the Monk Cell, which is an add-on. This guy, David Ciccolo, that used to brew with... I always do that. Now, Tremont Brewing Company in Charleston, Massachusetts there. He was brewing there for a while and then decided to open up a Belgian beer bar in the Brookline neighborhood of Boston. So it's been a big success, and it's been a favorite bar of mine since I've been living there. And it's neat to be able to come back there and do this event.
You know, Ron Pattinson, who we're talking about, so he also writes for Beer Advocate.
Sometimes. He does.
Is it regularly or is it just occasionally?
I think it's more occasionally as he's able to put stuff together. But yeah, he's done, I think, at least 2-3 articles so far for Beer Advocate.
Chris, have you kept up with Ron Pattinson and what he's doing?
And I really like the historical stuff that he's been doing, because it's phenomenal to drink beer as it was meant to be consumed long ago. And I think that's caught on in many different ways. I mean, I brought a beer today from Star Hill, the Monticello Reserve.
Let's crack that.
Let's open that.
Which is also it's based on a beer style that was consumed at Monticello by Thomas Jefferson back in, you know, the 1800s. So I'm really glad that people are appreciating beer's past as much as beer's present. You know, like, we talk about extreme beers all the time and how everyone's going for the, you know, what's the biggest, you know, can we do a 12%? Can we do a 15% beer? And that's what American beer culture has become. But, you know, it's important to remember the roots of American beer culture, too.
Chris, on your site, Brew York, New York, correct? Mm-hmm. Brew York, New York. I know you have a list, a blog roll of beer-related blogs.
Mm-hmm.
Would you post Ron Pattinson's blog? Because I can never remember what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always go to your blog, and I always scroll through. That would be...
Yeah,
my blog roll needs some updating, so thanks for the reminder.
One. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Dan, the name of his blog is called Shut Up About Barkley Perkins.
Yes.
So it's chock full of fun stuff.
.com?
Yeah. I think it's Blogspot. I think it's on Blogspot. I'm not
yeah,
sure.
It's a Blogspot blog.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, this Beer for Dummies book, we're having a lot of fun already. I read it last night, and you know, it starts out, it's got a real good overview, you know, of everything you know about beer, but we all know about beer. But then, like, the chapters are really good, and I really like this extreme beer chapter. The other chapter I really like is the one about dining with beer. And Steve, that's one of your favorites, isn't it? Beer and food pairings?
Food pairings, but more importantly, cooking with beer I absolutely love. And there's one recipe that's in the book that's to die for. It's the chocolate stout silk pie, which I call my fundraiser pie. I've been making it for school fundraisers for about 20 years now. And if I'm not allowed into a parent meeting without that pie.
The kids love it.
The kids love it, yes. It is. It's a lot of fun to make. It's real easy. And the gelatin source is 24 marshmallows, which you have to count. And I had my kids when they were little counting them. Now, of course, my kids are older. They're making them. And a bag of chocolate chips. I mean, it's not hard. There's a little bit of a third of a cup of, or two-thirds of a cup of stout. In my case, it has to be stout. And a third of a cup of condensed milk, a little vanilla, a little salt. And it all goes in the blender. The liquids go in hot. They melt the other things. You blend it for a minute, pour it into a pie shell. And you have to wait to eat it till it gels.
You know what we're going to have to do? We're going to have to do a night in the spring at Jimmy's number 43.
There you go.
We're going to have some pretty things. They'll bring their new historical beers, and we'll make some of your favorite dishes.
All right.
All right. Guess what? The other part of Beer for Dummies, Marty Nackel, he's going to be on with us in a minute. We'll take a short break on Beer Sessions Radio.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined. Say, wouldn't you like to know what's going on in my mind? So let me get right to the point. I don't pop my cork for every guy I see. Hey, big spender. Time with me. Wouldn't you like to have fun? Fun, fun.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's number 43. We have the New York City cool beer guys here tonight. Guys, go ahead and say your names again. Go ahead, because I can't remember.
Chris O'Leary from BrewYorkNewYork.com.
Jim Barnes from Pretty Things Beer and Ale Project.
Steve Ettlinger, co-author of Beer for Dummies.
I'm Jay Steinhauer from American Beer Distributing.
All right. Well, we've been talking about things inspired by the Beer for Dummies book, which is actually really good. And it's Marty...
What do you mean, actually?
Well, you know, the title is, you know, it's...
I'm dumb. Pass some beer over here.
I haven't really read many of the For Dummies series, I must say. I mean, I'm used to saying things like Microsoft for Dummies.
The only one I ever owned was HTML for Dummies, like original HTML. Like we're talking like, you know, 96, 97. So
did it work?
I can still code today in HTML. So
there you go, and I can drink beer.
Yeah,
Steve, which other For Dummies books have you co-authored or produced?
Well, I produced Wine for Dummies, which means that I had the idea and I recruited the writers who had not done a book before. And they had the nerve to be real successful and go on and do about a dozen derivative titles, California Wine for Dummies, French Wine for Dummies, Red Wine for Dummies. It goes on and on. It sold in the aggregate over 1 million copies.
Wow. And besides Wine for Dummies and Beer for Dummies, tell us more because this is fun.
Well, I've actually Beer for Dummies sort of influenced me to pay attention to ingredients. I was doing guidebooks to ethnic restaurants and so forth and always wondering about the natural ingredients. writing about them. And then one day I said, you know, what about polysorbate 60? Is there like a Bordeaux for, you know, got Bordeaux for Bordeaux wine grapes? Is there a Bordeaux for polysorbate 60? That translated after like 5 years into a book called Twinkie Deconstructed, which came out a few years ago, where I traced down all the ingredients in Twinkies and went to see the equivalent of the vineyard for polysorbate 60 and sodium carbonate.
we're waiting for your co-author. Is Marty on the air, Jack?
I am here.
Hi, Marty, tell us how does pronounce your name.
Nachel, rhymes with Rachel.
Marty Nachel. Well, you're a cool guy. I'm going to let...
He's very cool.
I'm going to let Steve give you an introduction.
Oh, my gosh. Marty Nachel is a serious beer expert who also is a fabulous home brewer, even had a home brewing shop. He's a beer judge. He's been a professional beer taster, which is what I want to be when I grow up. And he was writing the newsletter for a Beer of the Month club for many years. He's co-author. He's written a number of books, including Homebrewing for Dummies and, of course, Beer for Dummies.
All right, Marty, welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, oh, he lives near Chicago.
Yeah, I was going to ask, where is this voice we're hearing
coming
from?
That's what his question was, too.
So, Marty,
go ahead.
You guys wrote a book called Beer for Dummies in 1996. What prompted you to write a book about beer?
It's what I know more than anything else. When the opportunity came up, I jumped. Boy, I couldn't jump fast enough. It's what I really, not only did I want to do it, but I really did think that the market needed it back then because the American craft brewing industry was just getting up to speed back about 96. I was more than happy to be a part of it.
That's great, man. Well, you're a really interesting guy. I really enjoyed reading the book, and I feel like that you've may have changed some things since you first wrote it back in 96. What are the major changes from 1996 to 2012 in your book?
The major changes, there's the one section that is all new, and in fact you've already touched on it, the chapters on extreme beer, on barrel-aged beer, on real ale, and about gluten-free and kosher and organic beers. So that's all new stuff.
Yeah, I found it really fresh because it's like, you know, there's a lot of books about, you know, how to make beer and the origins of beer. And it's true. When I got to the middle section, I was like, wow. I stayed up late last night and I read it.
Do you hear that? You got him staying up late reading the book. He couldn't put it down.
With a beer.
You know, it's good to have a book that I can look forward to reading, you know.
You know, and it's great. I think those sections, especially... You know, as someone who hosts beer tastings on the side, sometimes I get questions about organic beer, questions about gluten-free beer, questions about kosher beer, too. I do some tastings at 92Y, and that's actually a question that always comes up. And it's great because this is a type of book that is, I mean, it's entry-level, but it's comprehensive, too. So when those questions come up, you know, for someone who's just trying to get into craft beer and they're like, can I find a beer that's organic? Can I find a beer that's kosher? You know, you answer those questions, which is phenomenal.
That's great. Marty, I'm going to ask you a couple more questions. So when did you first drink your first beer and or make your first beer?
When did I drink my first?
You can plead the fifth, Marty.
Legal, I can tell you that. Actually, the state of Illinois, back when I was about legal age, was 19. So I started a year or two early. Of course, now I'm 21, but nevertheless, I started brewing in 1985. So I was about 27 at the time.
And then you just took it from there, right? I mean, you're really an amazing guy. I mean, I keep looking at the book, and everybody's going to get it. It's just called Beer for Dummies. One of the areas you talked about is like this guild of people that take care of beer, and the one that I noticed was the Ale Conners.
Correct.
Is that just like an interest of yours, or you know, tell us more about this Ale Conners thing.
It's the name. I came across it many, many, many years ago, and I was always intrigued by it. You guys were talking about beer history just a little while ago, and I'm very interested in beer history as well. And when I first learned of the Ale Conner, there's a nifty little story that goes with it. But I chose to use that name for my consulting service, and it's kind of stuck. So, you know, whenever my business card says Ale Conner, my website says Ale Conner, basically what I just refer to myself and my service as.
Excellent. Steve, good. Give us a little more background, because there's some really just really cool tidbits in here, and I'm going to read it again, because...
Well, that's great to hear. Well, you know, when you do a reference book like that, you of course, you want to... the dummies format is what contributes to making it easy to understand. But my job is largely to ask questions, to wonder, and I'm a pretty good person to do that, because I'm a completely befuddled consumer, so I want to know... What are all those terms you guys are throwing around? And once there's any time there's a term that Marty or any other person like you guys today would put out, I'll write it down. I'll check it out. I'll say, hey, Marty, can you put that in there? I want to know what does it mean and if it's important. And if it's not important, I want to know that too. The other thing is we have an obligation to sort of teach, like the history of beer. It was so interesting to come. Marty did this incredible research on historical moments. It goes back so far. For me, it opened up a whole new world, because I wasn't real familiar with the world of beer when I started on this book. In fact, I had to do a lot of research, a real lot of research. A beer almost every day.
Different beer. I'm going to read this because, Marty, you've done a lot of research. Okay. One of the oldest public offices in England is that of the ale conner or taster, a post created by William the Conqueror in the 11th century in order to keep ale prices and quality in line. Not only was the ale conner an expert judge of beer, but he had the power to condemn a batch of beer or order its sale at a reduced price if it didn't meet his high standards. This token civil position still exists in England.
I have that job now.
Well, I was going to say, one of my biggest campaigns on my site has been about the, you know, the marking up of beer and the overpricing of beer. I feel like I fall right into that category too. Sure. That should go on my business card as well.
Chris, tell Marty what you've been writing about.
So I mean, last year. Well, here's the funny. Like I am a purist, I think, when it comes to a lot of things about beer. And, for example, last year on my site, I basically took up a whole campaign where it happened to be that every bar in New York City was calling their backyard a beer garden. And I'm like, well, just because you have a few tables and a concrete patio doesn't make you a beer garden. If you understand the origins of the beer garden, then you would know that you at least need vegetation and communal seating, and it needs to be outdoors, which, believe it or not, they were passing off places as indoor beer gardens.
So. You're becoming kind of a watchdog, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're worried about beer gardens. You've actually been following... some of the laws in New York State?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. In fact, today I posted about the farm brewery bill that's up in Albany right now, trying to get more brewers to use local products in their beer and local ingredients in their beer. But it's a huge challenge because, I mean, there's 25 acres of hop farms in all of New York State right now. Right. One 15,000-barrel brewery could utilize more than half of that yield if it yields a good enough crop.
I just read that bill, too, and it's almost like there's a projection, like you're supposed to, over a course of years, up the ante about how much you're actually producing on-site to put into your own product to qualify as a farm brewery.
Exactly.
That was a scary thing, actually, in Massachusetts.
Sure. Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I think it was the treasurer there that was, like, trying to enact this, like, farm brewers, manufacturer brewers bill, and it would have killed the businesses for so many brewers.
What happened is they had a farm brewers law, and then no one was enforcing it. So every brewer applied for a farm brewer's license because it was so much cheaper,
including Sam Adams.
Exactly. Oh, and then when they tried to enforce it, there came the problem. In fact, I cite in my article today about the New York bill, I cite Mercury Brewing up in Ipswich, Massachusetts, which when they said, oh, well, now the farm brewer's license will force me to have 50% of my grain be from Massachusetts, I would need 1,200 acres to do that. I mean, Valley Malt, which is the largest malt house in the Northeast, only has about 36 acres of grain being grown. So it's a very promising concept, the farm brewer concept, but in practice, there are going to be a lot of challenges.
Well, if it ever comes to be, it'll be a bunch of small businesses thriving in this country, manufacturing something on a small scale for small regional consumption, and that's a good thing.
And it'll help local farmers.
So this is what the ale corner can do. Hold on a second. We'll be back in a minute. Marty, stay on the line with us. We're going to take a short break on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Well, she's all you'd ever want. She's the kind I'd like to flaunt and take to dinner. But she always knows her place. She's got style, she's got grace. She's a winner. She's a lady. Oh, 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 she's a lady. Talking about that little lady. And the lady is mine. But she's never in the way. Always something nice to say. What a blessing.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Here we are at Roberta's in Bushwick, celebrating Heritage Radio Network. Many of the hosts have reached 100 shows, including us, and next Wednesday at Santos Party House in downtown Manhattan. There's going to be an awesome party. A lot of artisanal spirits, craft beer, wine, a chocolate table, cheeses from Jasper Hill, and some other chef foods. It's going to be awesome. Go to heritageradionetwork.com. You can buy your ticket. Supports the network, and we're all here because of heritageradionetwork.com. So we got Marty and Steve from Beer for Dummies on the air. And Marty, the thing from your book that's most impressed me is your section on watchdogs of beer over history and this ale conner concept. So Jay from American Beer, he says that he's an ale conner.
I would say I have to be because, you know, we're taking beer from small breweries from around the country and then putting it into market. So, like, if there's an issue, we have to nip it in the bud, you know, before we put it out there and have everybody else complain about it. So in that sense, you know, we're very critical about the breweries we want to work with. We only want small little guys that meet our criteria, and then we only want to put it into independent accounts throughout New York City because we're a small business, and our breweries that we work with are small business, and our accounts are small business, and that's it. We don't make $300 million a year.
Marty, are you still on the air?
I am.
Okay. With Steve, tell me why you were so inspired by this Ale Conner concept, and you went ahead and you founded some type of organization about Ale Conners, right? Did you?
Well, you're a consulting firm. I have to say, I was impressed, too. I didn't know you could care so much. And Marty, would you say it's equivalent to the guilds that surround wine knowledge, like the sommeliers and so forth, and the wine, you know, the wine experts guilds?
Who's the question directed to?
You.
Well, actually, I'm sure you guys have heard of the Cicerone program.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's actually more directly related to the beer sommelier. I guess you could say that, in a sense, the Cicerone is the modern-day version of an ale conner. But, of course, when I chose the name back in 93, Cicerone didn't exist. So,
What is the ale conner program, or what was it?
Oh, it's just the name of my consulting firm. It's just whatever. I do a lot of tastings around Chicago. I help plan festivals and beer and food
and you have a dinners. Beer you have a beer certification thing though going on the web, don't you?
I have that as well. Since I brought up Cicerone, I should just mention that it's similar to Cicerone in that there's an online certification test you can take, but no affiliation with Cicerone whatsoever.
So you're the ale conner?
I guess so.
So what places do you like in Chicago? Where could I get a good beer tonight?
I'm sorry, the phone was breaking up.
Sorry, man. Is there a place you can recommend in Chicago where I could get a good beer tonight?
My God, there are numerous places.
Where would you go if I picked you up right now and drove you in town?
I go to one of the many brew pubs that have now sprung up all over the place. One of my favorites is Haymarket, and there's also Revolution. Two of the more popular ones in Chicago.
Yeah, I met the guys from Revolution in October. Their beer was really tasty. They were really nice people.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, that's Ray Daniels, his part owner. He's the gentleman who put together Cicerone.
I'm always impressed whenever I go to Chicago that that even local beer is just so reasonably priced, too. In fact, I picked up a copy of – don't ask me how I get this, but I have a copy of Time Out Chicago in my possession. And, you know, a pint of, you know, your local craft beer can run $3.75 to $5, whereas here – we're paying so much more. So it's so much more accessible in Chicago, and I think that's why I enjoy going to Chicago and enjoying the beer there, so the local beer there so much.
I would have to agree with that. Chicago is pretty reasonable in comparison to other cities, I suppose, but even Chicagoans will complain about the prices on occasion. I would say the average pint price is probably about $5.
Yeah.
On average.
Marty, are there remnants of the old brewing, the German brewing culture in Chicago?
No, it's pretty much obliterated now. We still have German neighborhoods, and you'll find the occasional German bar. But no, as far as the Germanic heritage here in the city, no, it's pretty much gone.
What about the historical, the drinking heritage there? I mean, people think of Chicago as a drinking town, and I've always been impressed by the number of, you know, neighborhood bars there. And, you know, I know they're probably, you know, best known for drinking a little bit more swill, but...
that is true.
But, I mean, has that changed? I mean, is craft beer having an influence on that culture?
I think, as far as the influence, I think the craft beer industry in Chicago is really only influencing the younger, more professional crowd. I don't think it's influencing the various ethnicities. We still do have our segregated neighborhoods, mm-hmm. and they do stick to old ways. I mean, we have a lot of a very large Polish. A number of Polish people living in the city. We have a large number of Hispanics. We have a lot of Czechs. And yes, they cling to their old ways and their old beers. But no, I don't think they're very much affected by the craft.
So is there any craft breweries out there that are featuring Germanic-style beers that they're producing, though, that are craft?
No.
That's kind of amazing.
Unfortunately not.
I know people in towns like Pittsburgh where there's a huge Polish-German population, and that's what they... You know, it's a blue-collar town, but there mm-hmm. are craft breweries out there. It's still big on the East Coast. I mean, you look at a company like a Victory, and they're making, they make their bread and butter off of Pilsner, and that's...
Look at Penn Brewing.
So that's what I'm talking about, indirectly, sure. Yeah.
So are the Chicago brewers all hipsters? Are they, like, young? Do they shave?
No brewers shave. We know that by now.
Can they shave?
They do all have beards, I swear.
Well, should we come out for Chicago? I think we should go out for Chicago Craft Beer Week.
I'm on.
Yeah, why not?
I think you should.
What's the date on that?
Tomorrow.
Chicago sounds fun.
Let's red-eye it.
Well, listen, Marty, I am so happy to talk to you and Steve. And Beer for Dummies, the second edition is really great, and there's a lot of really good information in there. And we're going to go back on a side note here. Jay, again, the small New York City beer distributor.
Well, I want to take 2 seconds to talk about the beer we're drinking currently. We just started up a great new little brewery called Carton Brewing. They're out of Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. They've been open about 9 months, so I brought 2 beers here today for us to sample. One is the Boat Beer, which everybody has in their glass at the moment, which is a session ale. It's 4.2%. So it's pretty easy drinking, but they designed it to be a sessionable ale for IPA lovers. So that beer you have in between those 7-8% IPAs and you want to cleanse the palate a little bit, that is the go-to. This is going to be a crusher for the summer.
Can I add that we have a bunch of beers here to sample?
Sure.
This one, everybody's pouring seconds on.
Yes, noted. It's fresh.
Now, I feel
it's
like
delicious.
The only one who's not, can you pass it?
Pass it on. Polish it off. Yeah, I brought 2 beers from them. The other one is called Brunch Dinner Grub, and that is basically, they're calling it a country ale. It's essentially an extremely light-bodied brown that's herbaceous, citrusy, designed to be extremely food-friendly. It's 6% alcohol. These guys are the next. I mean, we did Captain Lawrence. It was pretty much the last little brewery that we blew up in the vicinity. And
you know, Carton has the same kind of quality point on the beer that they're making, in my opinion, and that's why we signed them up. And they're 25 miles from where we're sitting right now.
Yeah. So as the bird flies,
is that closer than Chicago?
I think it's closer than Rochester or Syracuse or Buffalo or the rest of the New York State area, close to.
And
Canada.
There's a ferry that just zips you right over there,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. That's one thing.
You can get over there and flash.
On my site, I'm eventually going. I've been doing these kind of extreme bar crawls or brewery crawls. For example, back in December, we went to all three barcades in one day.
Sure, that's fun.
Philadelphia, yeah. Jersey City, and New York. The next one we're going to do is we're going to go out to Atlantic Highlands and go to both Carton and to Kane as well.
Kane is
and,
the other guy.
Yeah,
that I'm
they're right down the street. It's pretty cool to see that the New Jersey beer scene is really pumping out some great beer.
It's great you're talking about that. Bar crawl, though, because I think the inspiration for the name of the boat beer is the boat you're going to ride over there on. And it's two cousins that are last named Carton that started up this company, and they're both, you know, working in Manhattan.
Do they have their own brewery?
Yeah, they got their own brewery. It's not a contract brewery. I mean, they have their own facility. I think they have a 30-barrel system, if I'm not mistaken. They have a nice little tasting room, nice little tour. We've gotten two styles out of them. I think the second one is being delivered as we speak right now, and then
are you selling it in New York City?
I got beer to start selling on Friday, so it's brand new to market.
So where are we going to be able to find it?
Well, let's see here. I mean, Roberta should get hip to it if they want to stick to their guns and give us some of their lines. Where have I sold it into so far? Places like Browery Lane, Brooklyn Beer Merchants.
Cool.
Great bars. I have a lot of interest right now. It's going to be in places like Sweetwater and Pies and Thighs. It's obviously on an American beer, our growlers, for $10 a pop, 24/7.
That's beautiful.
And the like.
You guys have really put out some great, have really propped up some great local brewers. I mean, Crossroads is another one that I'm just, their Outrage IPA.
It's outrageously
hands
awesome.
Down my, it was hands down my favorite local beer of 2011.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And we've gotten so little of it, though. I mean, we literally get like 16 kegs a month, so when these people come clamoring for it, we got to make sure we take care of them, and vice versa. But
that's how you know it's fresh.
It's when you buy my whole portfolio, you get some of that.
You know, when Beer for Dummies first came out in 1996, I would say the biggest change is now it's like every month we're on, there's some new beer that's locally made from everyone's region that's coming into the market. And this is like the golden age of beer. It's
it really
exciting.
I'd like to address that for a moment about the golden age. There's something I saw that stopped me in my tracks. It really marked that we'd crossed a threshold, that beer, that craft beer in particular, and beer appreciation had developed to a point that we never imagined years ago. And that's because you can get a growler filled at a drugstore in Manhattan called Duane Reade.
Oh, yeah.
You can go in and get Q-tips, toothpaste, and a growler of craft beer.
Well, they give you a growler of Blue Moon in there.
That just blew my mind when I saw that. And I think that means, like, okay, beer is here.
Yeah. And I think that's what changed between when the first edition came out and when this edition came out. We talked a lot about the bubble having burst a little bit in craft beer in the mid to late 90s, and now it's on a comeback again.
It was really brew pubs. Sure, those are places
really
that are trying to run restaurants, not people trying to do production.
No, exactly. But you know what we've noticed is that people are getting nervous about the bubble bursting, and you know our numbers are far above what they were in the late 90s. What makes me a little less nervous about it is that the focus has been left less on craft beer in general and almost more on local beer. It's more the whole locavore movement just as a whole has helped prop up local beer.
It's disgustingly trendy, isn't it? I mean, there are plenty of people riding on the coattails of that thinking, right?
Exactly.
They actually have no care about what that really is.
Hey, I've got a bad question for you.
I got a bad answer.
Okay. presumably, eating local is cool, but is local beer, is drinking a locally produced beer better from a culinary point of view than one that's produced, say, out of state or across the country?
I think freshness, but then also you're talking about a pure marketing standpoint, and that's that. I mean, you want to say local, and that'll sell. And a lot of stuff that's marketed as local isn't even made locally. It's contracted hundreds of miles away. And meanwhile, there's a company that's 100 miles from here in a different state, mind you. It's not New York, so it doesn't say New York on it.
But on the other hand, that's more local than something that's being pushed as brewed right around the corner and being, you know, the wool's pulled over the eyes of the consumers.
But from a taste or quality, freshness, a physical quality point of view, is something from, say, Colorado or Illinois going to be really not as good as the one from New York?
I don't think so. We pick up beer and have it here in 2 days.
Yeah.
So I may have beer made 3 days ago from Colorado here.
Yeah.
Done. I mean, so if freshness is the overriding issue, if it's going to sit somewhere. But other than that, no. I mean, I strongly believe American-made is local enough, and that's that.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about small businesses in this country offering manufacturing jobs in a small business setting, and who gives a shit if it comes from 150 miles away or 350 miles away? I mean, it doesn't really matter one way or another. It's quality over quantity or locality. Excuse me. It's quality over locality.
I'm going to take issue with you. That was a good answer, not a bad answer.
Yeah. I got some bad opinions, though.
that was the question I was going to ask, too, yeah, with Marty, is this whole issue of, like, you know, in relation to the ale counter about, you know, just so many brewers just coming up, you know, nano brewers, you know, small production regional brewers, and the issue of just, like, you know, being able to say, well, yeah, there's well-made beer and there may not be some well-made beer out there, no matter how good the intention. I don't know. Just what are your thoughts about that? Like, there's so many brewers out there just coming up that are producing beer for the commercial market on various levels, some small as like 5 barrels or a single barrel brewing system to 30 barrels.
I think the market responds. If it's good, it's good. I mean, forget like the whole online, you know, rating forum. If it sells, it sells. And the problem would be for these little breweries, if you send it far away and it's not fresh when it gets there and it's not at peak consumption, then there's a problem, and then people can say, I don't know, it's not that good. Well, it's like, if it's closer to the source and it has to get consumer closer to the source, then it's up to the business people that are running these breweries what their model's going to be. And how far do you want to go? Do you want to sell it all over the country? Do you want to sell it in your backyard?
More importantly, if it tastes good, drink it.
That's the most important thing. When in Rome and it's awesome,
exactly.
Get it.
Exactly.
Well, we can go deeper into that, because I've enjoyed drinking some beers, and I have this thing called the hangover quotient, and there's certain beers I feel like they're really well made, naturally made with the best ingredients. I don't have a bad hangover.
Yeah,
and
true.
John Siegel, who's a big hops guy, always calls me on it. But we have a lot more conversations to come out of this. I'm going to have to say that we're going to have to sign off soon. I'm going to shout out to some events. Our home here, Heritage Radio Network, is going to have a big party next Wednesday, and Beer Sessions Radio will be celebrating our 100th episode along with many of the other hosts on this network. It's amazing. There's spirits, craft beer, and really great food. Check it out. It's at heritageradionetwork.com. Party's next Wednesday, March 21st. Other Good Beer Seal Bar events. The Dude to CL guys from Montreal, I would say, talking about quality brewers, real small brewers doing a great thing. Yes. They're coming to New York this weekend.
I'm psyched about
Saturday
that.
They're going to be at Jimmy's Number 43 in the afternoon for a meet and greet and a small beer dinner at 6 o'clock. And on Sunday at 12 o'clock at Spite and Dival, who's the ideal Good Brew Seal Bar.
And if the weather's nice, you'll be able
to
sit.
So if you want
outside.
To be an ale counter,
yeah, that'd be great.
And you really care about who's picking your beer, check out the goodbrewseal.com bars, because you know what? They are the ale counters of our age. And Barrier Brewing a Night is March 20th at Mission Dolores in Brooklyn, another great Good Beer Seal Bar. In closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the goodbrewseal.com. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter us at @beer_sessions. Hey, so thanks to Steve, Marty, Jay, Chris, and Jim Barnes for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Carlos Salguero, and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Mr. Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Cheers to Ray Dieter.
Cheers. More to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow. Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.